It is Free Talk Live. Getting ready to get kicked off of more video platforms for medical misinformation, because we have the audacity here to actually look at things, look at the evidence, and come to a conclusion. You're welcome to join the discussion, 603-283-6160. And I know everyone is sick of hearing about COVID, myself among them. But I think what we're seeing right now are the beginnings of people realizing that the government has no idea, the medical experts have no idea what they're talking about. And I also think we're seeing a lot of sunken cost fallacy. A lot of people invested their entire lives for the last year into fear-mongering and COVID-19 and how big of a threat it was, and in the vaccines themselves. I mean, the government certainly invested a lot in the vaccines. And all evidence that I've seen points to the conclusion that they just don't work. I don't know if they're risky or if they're dangerous, and I don't really care. They don't seem to work from what I can tell.
I mean, how would you be able to tell? Because if you come down with COVID, unless you're elderly with serious medical issues, you're probably going to be fine. Well, in many cases, you won't even show any symptoms.
The whole point of a vaccine is that you won't come down with COVID once you're vaccinated against it, right?
Yeah, that's what a vaccine's supposed to do.
Right. But that's not what this one is doing. And we have evidence of this in California, a higher COVID rate found in some counties with a higher vaccination rate. But it's worse than that, because five other counties with lower vaccination rates have lower COVID-19 transmission rates. So the most densely vaccinated counties in California all have a higher COVID transmission rate than the ones where the unvaccinated numbers are the highest.
Now, didn't you say something, and I don't know if you were just reading a story or whatever, it kind of blew past me last night on the show, about 97% of people who are vaccinated don't get it, or I forget what you said, but it's like, whatever that number was, there's all kinds of crazy numbers out there. And according to the New South Wales, one of their bureaucrats on live television, he states that they have 141 new cases in New South Wales. Remember, we talked about New South Wales, what was it, last week or
yeah, they're constantly locking down, and I think they're looking at another month of this.
Yeah, insane levels of lockdowns to the point where you can't even leave your house in New South Wales. You know,
that's horrific.
Even if you're on a construction crew, construction's been frozen. Every business out there is frozen, with the exception of grocery stores, basically, and quote unquote essential businesses,
disposable workers,
and yet, despite the insane lockdown, people are still getting sick. But the people who are getting sick, according to, I mean, I couldn't believe it when I saw it. I mean,
I have the audio here,
yeah,
if that's what you're referring
to.
Go
ahead and play it, because when I played this thing, I'm like, is this being taken out of context? You have to listen to the whole thing.
Hospital with COVID at present, and 43 are in intensive care, 18 of whom require ventilation. So this is a very serious disease. Of those 141, 60 are under the age of 55 and 28 under the age of 35. And of the 43 people in intensive care, one is in their teens, seven are in their 20s, three are in their 30s, 14 are in their 50s, and 12 are in their 60s, and six are in their 70s. So this is affecting people of all ages with very serious disease. All but one are vaccinated. One person has just received one dose of vaccine.
All 141 cases,
but one.
New cases, all but one are fully vaccinated.
That's what he said.
Yes.
I mean, I heard that. Did you hear that?
I heard that.
Okay.
And that is, who is that in Australia?
Not clear, but he's one of their bureaucrats, obviously, standing in front of the New South Wales banner there, just like the other woman that we played the clip of recently.
And this is no surprise to us, right? Because we knew this was going to happen, because COVID-19 is a cold, and colds mutate too quickly for a vaccination to work, which is why we never had a vaccine or even a treatment for the common cold. So I've got an article here. State workers and healthcare employees will now be required to show proof of vaccine. That is nothing to do with what the article is actually about. This comes as the highly contagious Delta variant is now dominant in the state.
And which state?
California. Sorry.
Okay.
And COVID rates have skyrocketed in the month since California officially reopened, including breakthrough cases among vaccinated Californians.
Mm-hmm.
A new analysis finds several counties with above-average vaccination rates also have higher COVID case rates, while case rates are falling in counties with below-average vaccination rates. I would speculate that this is because where vaccination rates are lower, natural immunity from fighting off the virus is higher.
It's stronger, too.
Yes.
Right, the natural immunity.
Because
if you have natural immunity, you're less, as I understand it, less likely to get the variants, too.
What they're telling us is always changing, but I did once see a study from someone, I don't recall exactly who, some university, that the natural immunization is not only stronger, but it appears to be permanent. Whereas the vaccines, they're already talking about booster shots.
Of course they are.
Yeah, because they got to find a new way to make money.
Hell yeah. They knew they were going to be banking big time on this.
Yeah, they can't just vaccinate you once and then be done with it. No, they have to vaccinate you again and again.
Well, I mean, that's what the whole medical status, you know, whatever you want to call the normal medical system is all about. It's about getting you on pills for life, getting you on treatments for life. We wouldn't want medical providers don't want you taking one dose and being cured. They don't want you to dose and, you know, MDMA and cure your PTSD. They want you to take whatever, you know, crappy medication with its awful side effects for the rest of your life to make sure that these people make all kinds of money.
Statewide data analyzed by the Bay Area News Group found five counties, Los Angeles, San Diego, Alameda, Contra Costa, and San Francisco, have both a higher percentage of people who are fully vaccinated than the state average and a higher average daily case rate. Compare that to these five counties, Modoc, Glenn, Lassen, Del Norte, and San Benito, which have below average vaccination rates and decreasing case rates. However, UCSF infectious disease expert Dr. Philip Norris clarifies that the data doesn't mean the vaccine is not working.
Just keep saying it over and over again that the vaccine is working even while people are getting sick after being vaccinated.
The data is demonstrating that the vaccine is not working. And all of these, the science has settled, people. You got to trust the scientists. Trust the doctors. Well, the doctors are demonstrably lying to you.
Listen, you just need to listen to your new religious leaders, the scientists and the politicians. What they say is true.
I hate it. You know, I noticed years ago that the deification of science was going to be a problem because I saw an image of Neil deGrasse Tyson where he had a sun shining behind his head,
God.
Where it was identical to ancient religious art of Jesus Christ. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, this is going to be
That's
an issue,
happening.
Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, now we're at that point where it's just, you can't question these people. Whatever they say, no matter how stupid it is.
Doesn't matter if they go back on the things they already said, change their own opinion.
And it doesn't matter if what they're asking you is violently stupid, like you have to get this vaccine to protect you against this disease, and the vaccine won't actually protect you against this disease, but we promise you the vaccine works. You still have to do the mental gymnastics to believe that because they said so. And I'm just not capable of believing that.
Yeah, ignore your own observations. Just listen to the experts.
That would be Dr. Philip Norris. Like other infectious disease experts, warns that vaccinated people may be unknowingly spreading the virus. So there's a bit of a Q&A here. So someone asked him if a lot of people think if they're vaccinated, they can't transmit COVID-19. Is that true? He says, well, originally we thought that might be true, but that's no longer the case thanks to the Delta variant, which, you know, as we pointed out, viruses mutate. Yep. Cold viruses mutate quickly, and it's already mutated its way around the vaccine. Oh, and by the way, because of that, I mean, let's not forget that the rise of the Delta variant came as vaccination rates were increasing. And that's the obvious result of that. The virus had to find a way to survive, and it no longer had anywhere to do that. So it evolved. And now that's the variant, thanks to the widespread vaccinations that is now spreading. So good job. You made COVID-19 a little bit more contagious, but as far as we can tell, not really any more deadly.
At this time, it seems like the COVID-19 is more evolved than humans.
More coming up. It's Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live. You're welcome to join us. 603-283-6160. That's the call-in line. You can talk about whatever you want, or you can join the conversation here. I'm just marveling about what's in the news today. But with you tonight, it's Aria.
It's Ian.
And not only, from what we can tell, not only does the vaccine not work, but there's also no benefit to getting it. Now vaccinated people, according to the CDC, should be wearing masks in areas with low vaccination rates. And I think it's limited to being inside. I'm not exactly sure. But the most interesting thing about this piece from Fox News are the comments, really. Because there's a lot of people down there in the comments saying that they got vaccinated and they're not putting a mask back on. Under no circumstances will they put a mask back on. So
because that's the reason they got vaccinated, because they were told it would be their ticket out of this.
Yes. And now
they were lied to.
They were lied to, shockingly. The CDC issued new guidance today recommending indoor mask use in areas with high transmission rates after new data. Because the headline of this says with low vaccination rates, but now they're saying high transmission rates, when we were just talking about this observation in California where lower vaccination rates have lower transmission rates, and higher vaccination rates have higher transmission rates.
Things that make you go,
Yeah, so these two things seem to be inversely proportional, at least to some degree, or not inversely, but you know, where vaccination rates go up, so do infection rates for some reason.
Unexpectedly, so.
It's very curious. Yeah. CDC Director Rochelle Walensky said recent studies have shown that those vaccinated individuals who do become infected with COVID have just as much viral load as the unvaccinated, making it possible for them to spread the virus to others. So, vaccinated people can get the virus. It doesn't appear to affect how the virus affects them, and they can still spread the virus.
So the whole point of this was what exactly?
I don't know, man. I really can't figure out why anyone is still buying into it except just plain old sunken cost fallacy. They believed in it hard enough to get the vaccine, and now they just cannot accept that it didn't work. And the government put so much money into it that they're never going to admit it.
No, double down. Go get two more vaccines.
We're seeing now that it's actually impossible if you're a rare breakthrough infection. They don't seem to be all that rare. That you can transmit further, which is the reason for this change. Following the announcement, staffers around the White House began putting on masks. Oh, man, those poor souls. Well, they work
for... I don't feel sorry for them.
I don't either. They work for the government. Vice President Kamala Harris wore one at an event Tuesday afternoon where she called on more Americans to get vaccinated to cut the spread of the virus. But that won't work.
Even though it's not doing that, yeah.
People need to get vaccinated. That is the only way we are going to cut this thing off. Nobody likes wearing a mask. Get vaccinated. Okay.
Oh, I don't know. I think some people do like wearing a mask.
Man, they really can't just throw out that carrot like that. I mean, the carrot they're throwing out here to get the vaccine doesn't even exist. And they just admitted that. You don't get to take your mask off by getting vaccinated.
Nope. You thought you were going to, but nope.
And she's still using that line. That is the only way we're going to cut this. Nobody likes wearing a mask, so get vaccinated. Yes, but the vaccinated people still have to wear masks.
Right. They're still putting the mythology out there that they need to get to X percentage, 70, I think was Biden's goal, 70% or more people with the vaccine, because then magic things will happen. And all of a sudden, this thing that's been proven completely ineffective or significantly ineffective is all of a sudden going to become effective.
At the very least, it's ineffective enough that I wouldn't bother with it. I mean, people need to get vaccinated, wear a mask, take the mask off, get vaccinated. Except it doesn't work that way. Administration officials still contend that the fully vaccinated represent a very small percentage of transmission, but I don't think they have any evidence to support that claim. They just are saying it, which is primarily occurring among unvaccinated people. Again, I don't think there's any actual evidence to support that claim, but whatever. Walensky said that the decision to call a return to mask use wasn't taken lightly and that she hopes it will be temporary.
Sure, just 2 weeks.
Officially raising the possibility that it will be permanent. I mean, even if it's, even if it's 6 months, it's still temporary. But she's saying she hopes this is a temporary measure.
Sure.
That officially puts it on the table. The government may decide masks permanent. Until the ranks of the vaccinated increase and the amount of virus circulating in the community decreases. And as we just looked at in California, those two things seem to conflict with each other. It is not a welcomed piece of news that masking is going to be a part of people's lives who have already been vaccinated. Now, remember, Vice President Kamala Harris was just saying, get vaccinated and we can take the masks off. This new data weighs heavily on me. This new guidance weighed heavily on me. And I just wanted to convey that this was not a decision that was taken lightly.
That's right. We take it very seriously when we destroy your freedoms.
Administration officials had been struggling in recent days with how to respond to the rising number of COVID infections and hospitalizations among those who are fully vaccinated amid pressure from public health experts to put mask recommendations back in place. So at the same time as they're saying, hey, there's a rising number of COVID infections and hospitalization among people who are fully vaccinated, they turn around and say, oh, well, it's actually the unvaccinated people who are the problem.
Yeah, pay no attention to these fully vaccinated people in the hospital.
Yeah, pay no attention to us saying one thing and then immediately turning around and saying the exact opposite and acting like there's no conflict between these pieces of information whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Much of Biden's domestic agenda rides on moving the country past the pandemic and shifting the focus to other priorities, such as infrastructure and voting rights. I don't think he's going to have that much time in office.
He's going to die?
I don't think they're going to let COVID go away within the next 4 years, at the very least. It's too useful for them as a tool of control.
Well, don't worry. I mean, COVID's not going to prohibit him from signing more spending. I mean, if
that's
there's
true.
An infrastructure bill, if there's another $1 trillion infrastructure bill or whatever, I don't know what the proposal is, but hundreds of billions, whatever, put in front of him, all he's got to do is sign it. And, of course, then more money will be printed and, see what happens to the price of cryptocurrency.
Within the administration, there had been concern that a focus on mask use could take away a key incentive for people to get vaccinated. Well, yes, think about it. There's no motivation now to get vaccinated, and having to put on a mask while vaccinated is kind of them letting you know that the vaccine didn't actually work in the first place, mm-hmm. and you still got to put the mask back on. If the vaccine worked, you wouldn't have to wear a mask. I don't know how else to explain
that
to people.
I'm not gonna.
Fair point.
Yeah.
But, in their worldview, the vaccine works. Why should they have to wear a mask? Mm. Why aren't people asking that question? I mean, sure, some people are asking that question, but too many of the believers in science are not asking that basic question. Does this thing actually work? And if it does, why are you wearing a mask?
How many people who just wore the mask to get along, just so their neighbors wouldn't be angry at them, so they wouldn't have to have a conflict at the grocery store, whoever the person is at the front of the Walmart or whatever. They wouldn't have to get into it, wouldn't have to, spend the time on that. How many of those people are going to go ahead and obediently put the mask back on when the new rules come down? And how many of them are actually going to stop and say, you know what, I've had it. I'm not going to keep being this obedient, pathetic serf.
I think it'll be a significantly higher number of people who just don't obey.
I hope you're right.
They're sick of it. Are you sick of it? 603-283-6160. More coming up. It's Free Talk Live.
After a devastating war, the alien visitors were driven back, and their willing human collaborators were left behind to face the music. When Imogene Anderson's ex-lover springs her from prison, Nathan Foster and his 14-year-old nephew, Ben, are tasked with bringing the pair to justice. An easy enough job until they discover something is inside Imogene, and the fate of the planet hangs in the balance. The Family Business by Mike Cooperi from BaneBooks.com.
It is Free Talk Live. With you tonight, it's Aria and Ian, and I don't know if it's people who are mad about what we're saying, or if it's people who are mad about what the government is doing, but we're getting a lot of angry reacts, I'm told, on Facebook.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we're streaming live, and I'm sort of surprised we're still streaming live to Facebook. In fact, I'm surprised we're still able to stream to any of the big tech platforms like YouTube or Twitch or any of these others, because they're constantly kicking us off, suspending us, banning us, and it's tenuous, our relationship mm-hmm. with these video affiliates. However, we do stream also to Odyssey.
That's right.
Odyssee.com. Mm-hmm. And there, we can't be censored. We can speak as freely as we want, and the videos will never go away. Free Talk Live has been automatically uploading its videos to Library, which is sort of an application back end behind Odyssey, mm-hmm. for years now. And if you want to continue to watch Free Talk Live, video.freetalklive.com is going to be the place to do it in the future. Our YouTube channel is like one strike away from permanent deletion, which means all of the content there ever streamed, ever uploaded, gets deleted. You don't run that risk with Odyssey. Odyssee.com, or if the easiest way to find a link to it is to just check out our channel there. Video.freetalklive.com is the place to do that. And tomorrow night, we're doing a special episode of She Talk Live that will be streamed only to Odyssey. So check out video.freetalklive.com if you want to see the first ever topless episode of She Talk Live.
Right, topless female. Because yes. We've had Topless Tuesdays with dudes for a couple of years.
Yes. And for anyone curious, yes, the other two females in the show are cisgender, what you would call normal women. They're not trans women. So
that's right.
Let's go to the phones. We've got Greg calling from New York. Greg, you're on Free Talk Live.
Hey, hey, hey. So I want to do a little bit of a rant. I think you guys will agree with what I'm saying. So everyone sort of listening is, who's libertarian inclined. So I think there's a big correlation between diabetes and sort of overweight people in the United States and, unfortunately, bad coronavirus outcomes.
There's certainly a link between obesity and diabetes and bad COVID outcomes. I don't think anyone ever disputed that. I mean, that's one of the primary comorbidities that is causing people who become infected with COVID-19 to die.
Exactly. And the people who actually wind up in the hospital and people who were affected badly typically are either overweight, obese, or have diabetes or both. And the thing is, this country, the United States, has the highest rates of people with these conditions, and largely due to sure. government policies. And I want to just list some of them to show just how bad it is. First of all,
Let me also say that, it only got worse during the pandemic as people weren't able to go to the gym. Some of them weren't able to go for walks. So obviously, and they didn't take down their caloric input or anything like that because they were doing less exercise. People are fatter now than they were 2 years ago. I see that daily out in the streets here in Keene, New Hampshire. People are definitely more overweight than they were 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, it's even affecting the kids. So, first of all, I'll say a few things that you'll agree with. Maybe one thing you won't because, I'm more on the left. But here are things that you would agree with. First of all, the government subsidized sugar to be put into so many foods and the high fructose corn syrup. If you go and buy anything in the store, chances are it's loaded with sugar.
Well, it's loaded with high fructose corn syrup, certainly. The number of things that contain actual sugar is relatively low, but just about everything that you buy at the grocery store, absolutely, high fructose corn syrup.
Exactly. Whether it's fructose or sucrose or whatever other sugars there are, the government has caused our food supply to essentially have this. And then also, then there's the factory farms where the government essentially, stays out of it. And the factory farms are giving antibiotics to these animals because they're all in abysmal conditions.
Yeah.
And these antibiotics could lead to superbugs that will make this virus, I hope I'm wrong, look like nothing. Because the superbugs, if you go back 100 years with no antibiotics, look what happened in the hospital.
Yep.
If the bacteria become antibiotic resistant, they'll be even worse. So,
and the same people who told us to get vaccinated against COVID-19, 30 years ago, they were saying, oh, let's just load all of these farm animals with antibiotics, fully never even considering the possibility that that could have a negative side effect. They just did it because they could. They never actually thought about what it could potentially cause. And now we do have these superbugs and things like that. And doctors as well prescribing antibiotics all the time, creating superbugs.
So this is where I do think, and because I'm on the left, I think that there is a role for the government to, you know, look, the factory farms are sort of the market. They select for cheaper hamburgers. The farm that has the least amount of cost will beat out the farm that doesn't.
Yeah, but a lot of that is protected by the government in that it's actually not legal to discuss some of the things that industrialized farms actually do.
It's not legal to discuss them?
Yes.
Yeah. What do you mean?
Some of the things. Yeah. I can't give you an example, but if you watch some of these documentaries like Food Inc. and stuff like that, they talk about some things that they point out that, you know, we wish we knew what was actually going on here, but it's illegal. Maybe I'm mischaracterizing it. I don't recall now, but there's something going on with what big farms are doing that is protected by government, and that's what's keeping the vast majority of people from knowing about it.
Well, okay, I don't know what that means, but I do know that when it comes to big corporations, they almost always engage in regulatory capture where they control the regulators. And so the whole idea that government regulation is going to be the solution to this is pretty obtuse because what they're going to do is they're going to write the regulations, and already have, to essentially write the small farmers out of business and prevent them from being able to compete in any meaningful way with the big mega corporations. I mean, companies like Tyson Foods, for instance, these are big political donors, and there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
Well, my criticism of government comes from the left. So I criticize government for being in bed with the capitalists and enforcing all these things that otherwise would be for the public good. I'll give you a laundry list of things, and you tell me what you think. One of them you would agree. The government comes down and enforces the patent system, which creates artificial scarcity in these drugs. So the drugs could actually help people. And these very diabetics, 25% of the diabetics ration their insulin. They can't afford even basic insulin.
Right. Once again, the government using its regulatory control to make sure these companies that are manufacturing the insulin and the other drugs are able to make money hand over fist and have very limited, if no, competition. So, yeah, I agree with you. Patents need to be abolished, and so do all other forms of licensure.
So there you go. I would characterize, and many libertarians, like Ayn Rand type libertarians, think that it's a form of capitalism to own ideas, to have private
ideas
property.
Can't be owned.
I would agree. So
you can only own a thing that is scarce, and something that is not scarce, like an idea, which can be copied in innumerable number of times. Same thing with an online file. These things can be copied without any damage being done to the original file or the original idea.
Yes.
That is, that's completely, there's no scarcity to those things, ideas and online things. There is scarcity when it comes to real life things, like, there's only so many handcrafted Amish farmer made chairs in the world, right? Like, if I have one, that's one fewer than exists. The Amish men and women have to make a new one in order for that to be replaced. So, there's scarcity there. And so protecting that makes sense.
Exactly. But if we're going to organize our society one way or the other, what I'm saying, and I'm always calling in saying, if we use competition as the basis for organizing our society, then we're going to need, let me say after the break.
Yeah, stick with us for a moment, Greg, because I know you didn't get to the point that you were trying to make. You said if we want to organize a society, I got to conflict with you right there. I don't want to organize a society, dude.
Yeah.
If society wants to organize itself, I'm fine. But I don't want to organize anything, really. What about you? 603-283-6160. It is Free Talk Live, and I've got to ask, do you feel like you were just lied to for the last 17, 18 months?
It's more like the last 40 years.
Okay, fair point.
As long as I've been alive.
But for the average person, they trust in the government. They don't
Stop
realize.
Stop it.
Yeah, I know. But they don't realize that the government is just constantly lying to them.
Yeah, and you know what? It turns out the government gang lies to you even if it's your guy in office.
Yes, they do. I mean, but this one has just been the most blatant lie I've ever seen told, where this virus came out, and you know, if it wasn't for the fear-mongering, I have to reiterate again and again, I don't think anyone would have ever known it was happening. Because it's just, the bodies weren't piling up in the streets like they told us they were going to be. They told us 2 weeks, lockdown for 2 weeks, and we'll flatten the curve. And now it says, oh, we're never going to flatten the curve, is the message they're putting out now.
Right.
But then it was, get this vaccine, and all of this can go away. We can go back to normal. And then they just keep, they throw that carrot out. And
pull
soon
the carpet
as you,
right out from under you.
As soon as you go to get a little nibble off that carrot, they yank it further.
Yep.
They're just doing it over and over. Seeing
how many times will people fall for the same trick?
I don't know, man. But we're talking to Greg right now. It's frustrating to me to watch all of this play out. Greg, however, you contend that the issue here is really obesity and diabetes.
Well, I'm saying that the U.S. Government has presided over decades of worsening obesity and diabetes for the American citizen. And
certainly.
They've actually made it worse. They've subsidized the high fructose corn syrup. They've basically made sure that Americans are getting in all of this diet. And then on top of everything, they also enforce the patent system, which causes the drugs to be way more expensive in this country than they are. The same exact drugs in other countries with the same cost of living cost a lot less.
So let's summarize. They are giving money to create this substance that is making people less healthy, and they are wielding their power in order to prevent people from getting treatments that would make them healthier. Is that right?
That's right. And
why would you want this government responsible for doing literally anything when that's what it does with the power it has now?
That's not what I wanted to do. I wanted to get out of enforcing patents.
Great.
I wanted to get out of subsidizing the sugar. But what I would like to say, though, is I think there are also roles for government in the case where the market cannot by itself solve the problem.
But we've seen what the government does when it gets involved. That was the basis of my question.
They always make it worse.
We've already, this is what the government did. They chose to subsidize corn and high fructose corn syrup, and they chose to subsidize the medical industry.
Because somebody industries paid them off and got the regulations written to favor them, which is always what's going to happen. What is it that you think that the market can't do, I guess? That would be interesting to hear.
Yeah, I'd like to give several examples. One is, let's start with the factory farms that are on the precipice of causing another, the super bugs, you know, the antibiotic resistant ones. The factory farms are a natural outcome of farms competing against one another. Because a farm, you know, you may say that if we reveal what's on these farms, people will care. But many people would still just buy the cheaper burger at McDonald's if they could.
I don't know that that's true.
Well,
but I mean, and I don't know that it's true that, you know, the factory produced farm is necessarily going to produce the cheapest food. It's certainly not the best food.
Well, okay, what Greg is saying here, let's accept what he says, though, for the sake of argument, that, okay, yeah, I mean, there's a certain group of people out there that they are buying based on price. You know, that's why they, you know, they're the amount of money they're making is small, and so they need to stretch it as thin as they possibly can, and so they buy the cheapest thing no matter what. Even if they might feel bad about the slaughtering methods or whatever, it's like, well, I'm sorry, I can't afford to buy the farm open-range chickens or whatever. I want to buy the cheapest eggs.
And it's not even,
and so, but what you're saying here, Greg, is that you know what's best for these people, right?
No, it's not that I know what's best. It's that the animals are suffering greatly, and billions of animals, okay, every year. It's not that they're slaughtered. It's that they're brought up their entire lives in abysmal conditions.
They're tortured throughout their entire lives and then ultimately killed in gruesome and horrific ways.
Yes. So what I'm saying is, from an animal rights point of view, the government's role, I think, is, and they've done this in Europe, they've done this in other countries, is to actually put a limit to how much these factory farms can cramp these animals into conditions and actually stand up for the rights of these animals.
So you think is there should be a criminal enterprise that goes around and threatens violence against the farmers? To get them to behave in the way you want them to?
The violence is being perpetrated on the animals at the moment.
See, this is why my philosophy covers this. My philosophy allows the free market to cover this particular issue. If you see animals being abused, go and rescue them. It's not theft. Animals can't be owned. It's liberating a creature that is being tortured.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting argument, and it would be interesting to hear what the community thinks if that were brought to a trial, right? So if, like, if you're going into somebody's place of business and liberating the ostensibly tortured animals from that property, and then they bring you to whatever semblance of a market court that we have, whatever sort of free market justice would exist, what would the people who were seeing that case consider it? If you're in an area where people are just like, whatever, torture that cow, well, then you're going to have a tough time.
Sure.
But if you're an area where
I wouldn't live in such an area.
Right. And if you're an area in a place where people are actually concerned for the well-being of those animals, then that farm would not succeed in its claim against you.
Well, that's an interesting question. You say, Aria, that you wouldn't live in such an area. So, like, when the South, for example, had slaves and people wouldn't live in such an area, it still goes on in that other area. So the question is, should you use force to end violence somewhere?
Here's what I think. You should use force yourself and or hire people to do it, but please don't force me against my will, possibly, to, you know, fund your what is essentially a mercenary operation. You know,
sure.
If you didn't have the state and you still wanted to force these people to your will, then you'd have to pay for it. You'd have to hire the mercs to go in there with whatever equipment that they would need to either kill or, you know, disable or injure the people that were doing that operation or torture them or whatever it is that you would want to do to try to make them behave in the way that you want to make them behave. And then my hands are off of it because you didn't tax me for it to support that operation.
But I'm going to condemn that operation as immoral.
Sure, but, you know, at least we're not having to pay for it.
Yeah.
Well, I would say it's more peaceful to give them a fine and have them deal with it economically.
What if they don't pay that fine?
That's the same thing.
What if they don't pay that fine, Greg?
If they don't pay that fine and they keep torturing the animals, I would say that they would pay a financial that you would go to their bank and you would garnish the money from there.
Oh, you would just steal from them.
Well, I mean, it's better than torturing billions of animals.
What if they don't have a bank? What if it's all crypto-funded?
Well, these days, yeah, that's an interesting talk about that in a few years. But for
the
now,
answer is eventually the government will send men with guns down to this farm, and they will impose your belief systems upon them. Now, look, I'm not saying that I don't empathize here with the plight of some of these animals that you're talking about. I get where you're coming from, but to me, all of these terrible things that you're bringing up, and this was only the first example. I know you said you had more, but these bad things that people do out there is not a justification to do more bad things to other people who never did anything bad, which is to say, to threaten them with violence if they don't pay for this crazy system of violence.
I have another free market way that we could take care of this, Greg. It would be relatively easy. You know, just spread the word about what Tyson is doing and how they're actually treating their animals and convince people, hey, buy your food from somewhere else. Sure, maybe there's some segment of the population that just can't afford that extra dollar or two to get that chicken that's free range, but I would imagine most people, if they stopped buying McDonald's and started buying groceries, they find out very quickly that, oh, you can actually get this free range stuff at about the same rate that you can get that McDonald's dinner.
Well, and if people weren't being taxed to death by the government, maybe they'd have a few more dollars to spend on better quality food. And also, again, we still don't really know, because we haven't really talked to any small farmers, all of the difficulties that they face in trying to jump through all of the various different hoops through USDA regulation, FDA, blah, 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 whatever, you know, stupid government hoops they have to jump through it in innumerable cost, as compared to the factory farms, where all they have to do is hire a lawyer and, you know, file whatever paperwork they got to file, and then they're exempt because they're getting a subsidy or whatever. There's, I'm sure, tremendous unfairness being instituted in all of these systems on behalf of the mega farmers.
Oh, absolutely. And that sounded like an invitation. Jay, if you happen to be listening, you are one of these small farmers having to deal with this bureaucratic nonsense that is protecting companies like Tyson. But absolutely, boycotts can work. We've seen it before, and they could work again. So if you want to exert market pressure on a company to get them to do what you want, use market pressure, not violence. 603-283-6160. Thank you, Greg, for the call. More coming up. It's Free Talk Live.
Breaking weather news. Belize is sunny and around 82 degrees every day this week.
What's the forecast for your life? If current politics and economic prospects are cramping your freedom, escape to the tropics. ECI Development has affordable second homes for you to own or rent in Belize and other tropical countries. Places with stable governments and growing economies. Secure your freedom now. To find out more, send an email to ftl@ecidevelopment.com.
Free Talk Live.
It is Free Talk Live. You can join the conversation, 603-283-6160 if you want to do that. You can talk about what we've been discussing, or you can talk about whatever happens to be on your mind. That's 603-283-6160. With you tonight, it's Aria.
And it's Ian.
And one thing the government doesn't like very much, it would seem, is cryptocurrency. And
that's right.
That's generally because they haven't found a way to exploit it or control it or really confiscate it for the most part. And they
don't
like
that.
Ways
to confiscate it.
Sure.
If it's on a centralized exchange.
Yes, such as Coinbase or Kraken. And it's very difficult. These wallets are generally anonymous, they are anonymous to, I don't know how to explain what I'm trying to say, so I'm not going to say it.
Well, the wallets on exchanges are not anonymous.
They're certainly not.
All know your customer, meaning that they've done ID requirements, questionnaires, all kinds of mandates by governments in order before you are allowed to open an exchange account with these companies like Coinbase and Kraken. But your standard cryptocurrency wallet, one in which you, the user, actually holds the keys to your crypto, because the Coinbase wallet, the Kraken wallet, these other exchanges, they have your keys. In fact, there's a recent court case about that that confirms that, indeed, if you don't hold your keys, you don't own your crypto.
You're referring to the story that we probably get into later of the guy who had Bitcoin on a cryptocurrency exchange, and when the Bitcoin Gold forked from it, he expected to receive the Bitcoin Gold, and Coinbase said, no, it's not your money.
That's right. And there was a case. Yeah, I mean, that's really all there is to the case.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
There's really not much else to it. I mean, there's a 17-page decision from the First Circuit Court of Appeals or something like that about this. But
I mean, it's tragic, but dude, you should have done your research and not kept your cryptocurrency on an exchange.
Yeah, I mean, hey, when it comes to newbies, I get why somebody would sign up for Coinbase. It's an easy way to get into cryptocurrency. You can connect it to a bank account. You can do the same thing with Kraken and easily fund the purchase of cryptocurrencies. But what they don't tell you at these places is that if they want to hold your account, you know, freeze it for some reason, let's say the IRS comes in there and says, hey, you know, we want this account. We want all their crypto. We want all the dollars associated with the account, whatever it's what's denominated in the account. And they'll do it. They'll do exactly what they're told. Or in this case, Coinbase, what happened when Bitcoin Gold came out was Bitcoin, the original Bitcoin, was sort of schisming into these different projects that had started as Bitcoin, and then Bitcoin became Bitcoin Cash and Bitcoin, and then Bitcoin Gold and Bitcoin, and there was like 60 other...
See, I thought Bitcoin Gold wasn't a fork of Bitcoin.
It was.
Okay, because it was ASIC resistant. I didn't know they had come up with the way of making the Bitcoin algorithm itself ASIC resistant.
So I don't know anything about whether it's ASIC resistant. I'll take your word for that.
Well, it was supposed to be. I don't know if they actually achieved that
goal.
Well,
they may have had to have hard forked the code in that case to do that, which may be the reason why they were forking away from Bitcoin. But it was one of the dozens and dozens of these, what they call hard or chain forks, where the Bitcoin network, it's one of the strengths of Bitcoin is that if people don't agree on the direction the network should go, they can just disagree and split the code and you know, do what they want.
And this gave us Bitcoin Cash, which, unlike Bitcoin, is actually usable as a currency.
Yeah, and when Bitcoin Cash came out back in 2017, if you remember, Coinbase, their official position was, we're not supporting Bitcoin Cash when that happened. So for listeners that aren't familiar, when these chain forks happen, it results in two competing cryptocurrencies that originated from the same blockchain. Now, the blockchain is the public ledger that is behind sort of the guts, the technological innovation behind these cryptocurrencies. Besides the cryptography, besides the strength of the math behind it, is the blockchain itself,
right.
This public ledger. And so when this the schism occurs, you then have two copies of that public ledger, and then at the point of the schism, in the case of Bitcoin Cash, it was August 1st of 2017 at a very specific time. At that specific time, the two different ledgers, which had been the same, now diverge, and there's completely different transactions that happen after that August 1st. And if you had one Bitcoin prior to August 1st, or half a Bitcoin, or whatever amount right. of Bitcoin you had, you then would have that same amount in the new Bitcoin Cash at the time.
Yes.
And so Coinbase and every other exchange, they got a ton of Bitcoin. Like, if you go and look at Coinbase's wallet, I remember I looked at Binance's wallet. It's one of the largest – I think it is the largest Bitcoin exchange on the planet. I mean, it
I thought
was
Coinbase
like
was.
Billions of dollars. No, Binance's.
Okay.
It was like billions of dollars worth of Bitcoin just sitting in a,
oh,
in
I'm
a
sure.
wallet.
And that gave them billions of dollars of Bitcoin Cash.
Well, not as many billions, but you know, a fraction of the amount of Bitcoin Cash. But a lot
for a time, Bitcoin yeah. Cash was a lot closer in competition to Bitcoin.
That's true. Initially, it was a lot closer.
It was like 2,500 at one point.
It's easier to talk about it in the percentage of Bitcoin. At one point, Bitcoin Cash was at its highest, I think like 49% of a Bitcoin. So after it came out, it kind of spiked up, and then it has now fallen to about 1.5% of a Bitcoin. So it's nowhere near its previous highs.
Which is unfortunate, but I mean, these things happen.
So what happened was Coinbase and every other exchange on the planet, they've got your Bitcoin, what is supposed to be your Bitcoin, but it's in their possession. So when the schism happens, they then have the equivalent amount of the new schism version of that thing. So whether it be Bitcoin Cash or Bitcoin Gold or Bitcoin SV or Bitcoin, you know, whatever.
And I imagine they initially said something like, we're not going to give anyone their Bitcoin Cash.
Yeah. So initially Coinbase had said, we do not support the Bitcoin Cash fork. We're just going to support Bitcoin. So tough.
Wow.
And there was enough outcry from the people who wanted wanted their Bitcoin Cash, which
sure.
they feel like should belong to them because they gave the Bitcoin to Coinbase for safekeeping. So their argument is, hey, I paid for this Bitcoin. If now you've got a Bitcoin Cash because I had a Bitcoin, I should also get that Bitcoin Cash. And that's ultimately what this guy argued, except with Bitcoin Gold. With Bitcoin Cash, there was enough of a demand to where Coinbase couldn't just let it sit there. They couldn't just take it all for themselves, which is what they would have done.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it is valuable. They're not just going to let it sit there. They know it's there.
And it was significantly more valuable then.
Yeah. So they ultimately reneged on their original, you know, promise to not do anything and said, all right, we're going to launch Bitcoin Cash on the Coinbase platform. And that was like but that was January. It literally took them 6 months, roughly, to make this decision.
And don't forget that, you know, they wanted to keep the Bitcoin Cash. The only reason they let people have it was because of public outcry. But they wanted to keep it. So if you want to talk about evil corporations and their attempt, Coinbase, Gemini, Kraken, to become the next system of banks, well, there you go right there. They're already as evil as the banks we have now.
Bitcoin Gold, according to the internet here, had its fork date on October 24th, 2017. So as I recall, it was the second fork. So Bitcoin Cash forked first, and Bitcoin right. Cash was the very first chain fork with Bitcoin. Every other, what they call altcoin or S-coin or, you know, these alternatives to Bitcoin out there, Litecoin, Dash, you know, all of these other ones were copies of the Bitcoin code. They didn't split the blockchain itself. They didn't, you know, have an actual schism of Bitcoin.
Right.
They just sort of did their own thing.
Litecoin basically has the same code as Bitcoin, doesn't it?
Litecoin, well, almost all of them were copied from Bitcoin, with the exception of Monero and a handful of the other privacy coins.
Okay.
All of them were copies of Bitcoin with modifications. Litecoin modified Bitcoin's code to make it 4 times faster block time. So instead of 10-minute blocks, they're 2.5-minute blocks. It's the only difference between
really?
Litecoin and Bitcoin.
Okay.
Yep. And then Dash took Litecoin's code and made more modifications to it
okay.
to make Dash. Okay, so October 24th, 2017 is when Bitcoin Gold had its schism with Bitcoin, and it was nowhere near as noteworthy.
No.
it was one of those things where people that had Bitcoin at the time, they're like, all right, I'll take my Bitcoin gold, and immediately sold it on an exchange. Very few people held on to Bitcoin gold. It's still out there, though.
Speaking of, I thought it was dead, man. Speaking of things going downhill, Bitcoin gold went downhill fast, and it stayed there.
Yeah, because, I mean, it was just another garbage. You know, it was sort of like the first garbage schism, and it was the first of many. There were then like Bitcoin Diamond and Bitcoin, all kinds of Bitcoin that literally dozens of them came out and were completely unremarkable since then. And so Coinbase never supported Bitcoin Gold, and this guy sued him, and he lost.
Speaking of Bitcoin alternatives, I once saw Bitcoin Silver. It was an Ethereum token, not even a fork of Bitcoin.
Bitcoin Gold's a number 83 crypto right now. It's still in the top 100.
Wow. More coming up about Kraken. It's Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live. Here we love cryptocurrency, and we just spent a segment briefly going over the history of Bitcoin Cash and Bitcoin Gold. And if you don't have any idea what we're talking about, it's time to learn. Go to Bitcoin.com, click Getting Started at the top. There's a number of short videos there for you to take 10 minutes out of your day to watch them, and you can learn the basics because this is complicated stuff, but you don't need to know all of the back end in order to make use of it.
No.
You do need to learn the basics so you don't make the mistake like this guy made with Bitcoin Gold. Probably didn't even know that he didn't actually own the Bitcoin that Coinbase was keeping in custody for him. And you don't want to be in that situation. So learn the basics before you get involved with it. But you should definitely be getting involved with it at this point. Bitcoin.com. They have all this information available for you to do that. And if you already know about cryptocurrency, you might consider checking out news.bitcoin.com to stay up to date on all the news that's relevant to you, all on a sleek, easy-to-use modern website. That's bitcoin.com.
You know, there's actually an interesting detail. There's a summary here from justia.com, law.justia.com, which is like a legal court case website. Archer versus Coinbase Incorporated. So there's an interesting reason why. So Coinbase didn't just like keep their mouths shut about Bitcoin Gold. They actually had a reason why they didn't support it. And it's interesting. I'll share that with you here.
Is it because it's trash?
Well, no. They have an even better reason. So Coinbase monitored and evaluated Bitcoin Gold's network. Because remember, this was the second fork of Bitcoin. Still fairly notable because it was the second one. Bitcoin Cash was the first. That's the most notable one. And this was the second one. Coinbase monitored and evaluated their network and informed their customers via its website, quote, "At this time, Coinbase cannot support Bitcoin Gold because its developers have not made the code available to the public to review. This is a major security risk."
That is fascinating.
Further, in 2018, the Bitcoin Gold network was hacked by hackers who stole millions of dollars worth of Bitcoin Gold from trading platforms and individuals on the network. So in that case, Coinbase might have made the right move to say, we're not going to support this thing.
I would have to ask Coinbase, though, is their code open source?
Oh, hell no, it's not.
Then they can't be trusted.
Well, no,
as they literally just said, we can't verify the security. We can't trust in Bitcoin Gold because it's not open source. Oh, but we're also not open source.
Apply
but you can trust
thing
us.
To them, yeah. So Archer, the guy in the case, sued Coinbase based on their failure and refusal to allow him to receive his Bitcoin Gold currency and Coinbase's retention of control over his Bitcoin Gold. Because even though that was their reason for not supporting it, they still got the Bitcoin Gold.
Sure.
They got all of that Bitcoin Gold from every single Coinbase customer who held Bitcoin at that time, which must have been hundreds of millions of dollars worth of Bitcoin Gold. And you know what they did with it.
They sold it.
They sold it on some other market that supported Bitcoin Gold, cashed it in for Bitcoin, and took that as profits for themselves, and they walked all the way back to the bank and with smiles on their faces.
I'm sure they did.
It was certainly more than enough to pay for whatever attorneys they had to, you know, this poor bastard, who knows what he paid for the attorneys to try to get this Bitcoin Gold, ultimately failing. And this is a court of appeals decision where the appeals court backed up the district court and said,
so this is final.
yeah, this is, well, I mean, he could go to the Supreme Court, but he's going to lose. So, I mean, hopefully he's learned his lesson at this point. It's just like, you know, going home with his tail between his legs and learns his lesson and keeps his Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies on his own wallet where you control the keys. Wallets like Edge Wallet, wallets like Exodus Wallet. You know, these are some of the best wallets out there.
Yep.
Right now. And the Exodus Wallet and Edge Wallet do not know who you are. When you create the account, when you download their wallet and you create, you know, your new wallet there, they don't know who you are.
There's no way for them to find out.
No. And so you just have to back up your keys, make it so that you store them in a safe place that's, you know, not going to get burned up by a house fire or something like that. And if you lose your device that wallet is on, you just restore it on a different device, and there is all your crypto, and you don't have to ask anyone's permission to do that.
Yep.
So don't, anything that you have on an exchange, just consider it could be lost. It could be lost for different reasons. The exchange could be hacked. That's happened multiple times.
It has. I'm stunned it hasn't happened yet with Coinbase.
Whether it's an inside job or not, you know, maybe it has happened to Coinbase, and they just, it wasn't, you know, maybe they caught it. They
True.
Caught it in progress, didn't lose that much, so they just made it, you know, made it good, right, on whoever lost whatever, right? Because they've made all kinds of money at Coinbase.
Oh, certainly.
They could cover a little hack if it happened. But some exchanges, like I think it was Bitfinex, which at the time was the world's largest exchange at the time. It's no longer, but they
got hacked.
This might
be why.
It's certainly a reason why. They got hacked and they lost millions of dollars. I think it was like $26 million worth of crypto. The Shire Free Church had an account at that exchange at one time, and our account took a hit.
That's unfortunate.
That. Yeah. Well, you know, that's what happens when you put money on an exchange, is it's at risk. It's also at risk of an exchange just going under. And, you know, they weren't insured or whatever. You know, they just go out of business and your crypto's there. Good luck getting it back.
That happened with a Canadian exchange. I don't remember their name, but the owner went to a place in Thailand, notable.
And died, quote unquote.
Yeah. And this is a place where people went historically to fake their deaths.
Right. Yeah. There's like criminals there that will help you fake your death.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a very real risk. And this wasn't, you know, a unknown exchange. It was one of Canada's more popular ones, and it still went under, and the owner took the money and ran and, quote, died mysteriously. Yep.
So anything you put in these exchanges, try your best to not hold it there. You know, if you feel, I understand why people use exchanges, because they're convenient. It's a way to change a thing from one thing to another. But if once you're done changing the thing from one thing to another, get the other thing out.
Yes.
Take it out to your own wallet that you have control over. Otherwise, they'll do what they want.
And it's not just, you know, the risk from the cryptocurrency exchange themselves, but the risk of government having direct access to the information that the cryptocurrency exchange has.
Correct. And that was the original story we were going to talk about.
Yeah, that's what we're dealing with here, where Kraken is being pursued by the IRS.
One of the largest, if not the largest, I mean, it's a huge domestic exchange in the United States.
And I thought Kraken had fought this battle with the IRS before.
No, Coinbase did.
I thought they did it at the same time.
I don't recall that.
And that Kraken was like, no, screw you, we're not playing your games.
I believe that was what Coinbase said, so I think that this is essentially a retread of the story that happened with Coinbase. So a few years ago, the IRS sent a notice to Coinbase saying, we want data on all of your customers who have purchased cryptocurrency from X year to Y year.
Which is the widest warrant I've ever heard of. All of your customers.
Coinbase fought it, and ultimately the decision was made in the court that the IRS was only allowed to get customers that had more than $20,000 worth of crypto exchanged at Coinbase.
Just pick a number at random, I guess?
I don't know where that number came from, but that's the number that they used. And so it only ended up that they had to hand over like 15,000 customer records instead of all of them.
Okay. Yeah. Well, hopefully Kraken is going to fight it a little better than Coinbase did.
I doubt it, because they're asking for only those customers that had over $20,000. I mean, if they fight it, I don't know if it's going to work for them.
Well, maybe they will. I mean, they've been a bit more stubborn with the government than Coinbase, but ultimately, they all play ball with the government. What do you think is going to happen here? Should Kraken just get out of the United States? 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live.
When Monster Hunter International discovers one of Isaac Newton's wardstones being auctioned off, they decide to steal it and use it to destroy the Chaos God once and for all. But a mysterious thief upends their plan, and it soon becomes a race against time as something much older and infinitely more evil awakens in the jungles of South America. Monster Hunter Bloodlines by New York Times bestselling author Larry Correa and Bain Books. Visit MonsterHunterNation.com for more.
It's Free Talk Live. You're welcome to weigh in. 603-283-6160 if you want to do that. That's 603-283-6160. With you tonight, it's Aria and Ian, and the federal government wants to unleash the Kraken. Well, actually, I suppose they want to leash the Kraken.
Oh, yeah.
At the very least, they want to summon the Kraken, it turns out. You just found the Department of Justice's press release.
That's right.
About their summons of Kraken.
I did. Kraken, one of the country's largest cryptocurrency exchanges. They recently moved to their operations to Wyoming. I don't know if you remember hearing about that, but that's because Wyoming is the most friendly of all of the 50 states to cryptocurrency business. I'm pretty sure it's Wyoming.
It's a Midwestern state anyway.
Yeah,
I know there is one that's friendlier to cryptocurrencies than New Hampshire.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Wyoming. They made it so that you could do a lot more with crypto and from a business perspective there, including turn your exchange into a bank, which is what Kraken had went right ahead to do once they made the move to Wyoming.
So Kraken is officially a bank?
As I understand it, yeah. Here's the press release.
I like when I'm right, but I wish I wasn't right about this.
You mean your prediction that the exchanges are becoming the new banks?
Yeah. And now Kraken is literally a bank.
Literally, yeah.
That's unfortunate.
From justice.gov, their Department of Justice press release issued Wednesday, May 5th, a federal court in the Northern District of California entered an order today authorizing the IRS to serve a John Doe summons on Payward Ventures Incorporated and subsidiaries, DBA Kraken, seeking information about U.S. taxpayers who conducted at least the equivalent of $20,000 worth of transactions in cryptocurrency during the years 2016 to 2020. So that means that if you only did $5,000 a year, then you would qualify under this particular summons.
Oh, yeah. This is broad.
Yeah. The IRS is seeking the records of Americans who engaged in business with or through Kraken, a digital currency exchanger headquartered in San Francisco, California. Gathering the information in the summons approved today is an important step to ensure cryptocurrency owners are following the tax laws.
No one can follow the tax laws. It's like 80,000 pages or something, isn't it?
I have no idea. I've never read them.
I have no desire to read them.
Have you? Has anyone out there ever read these things?
Unless
you're an actual like tax attorney.
I remember hearing a story about, you know, a study that gave 10 different accountants the same numbers and said, hey, we want you to do the taxes here. And all 10 accountants came up with different
results. Yeah.
That's how convoluted and silly the American tax code is.
There's also and I think it's been done more than once, but the studies that are done on the actual IRS helplines, where if you call the IRS helpline and ask them like the top 10 questions that they get asked about taxes, that they'll answer the question wrong a good percentage of the time, like 7 out of 10 times or something like that.
I'm not surprised, man. Yeah. I mean,
they don't even know their own rules.
They can't possibly know. 80,000, that number sticks in my head for some reason.
Whatever it is, it's longer than any human being could rightfully be expected to actually read.
Yeah, or comprehend.
If
they did manage to read that much text, they wouldn't be...
It's impossible.
It certainly contradicts itself in there at least a few hundred times.
But they want you to believe that you owe them and you owe them your obedience and you're all this, you know, spend as much time as you can possibly spend trying to figure this crap out. Acting Assistant Attorney General David A. Hubert of the Justice Department's Tax Division said, quote, those who transact with cryptocurrency must meet their tax obligations like any other taxpayer. There's no excuse.
IRS doesn't take cryptocurrency.
No, they don't. But they will tax you on it if you tell them about it. And if you don't tell them about it, and then you sign a form saying you don't have any or you didn't buy any, now you've lied to the IRS, and they'll charge you for that.
Yes, that's perjury.
And that would actually be a worse charge, in fact, from what I understand. Now, I'm not giving legal advice, but as I understand it, I've heard a rumor that the IRS has put a question about cryptocurrency on the actual tax form.
They have indeed.
Like that it's the first question or
something
like that.
It is the very first question, and it is very, very direct.
Yeah.
It is 100% clear what they are asking.
Yeah. And if it wasn't clear before how important government, you know, considers cryptocurrency to be, they've made it crystal clear by making it question number one.
Yes.
Like, they're not even trying to pretend, oh, yeah, let's put this down at question number 40 or, you know, question 30 or some, just bury it in there. No, it's question number one because it is the number one threat to the status quo. Really, it is.
Absolutely. Because, and as I understand it, cryptocurrency isn't taxable until you convert it back into USD. I don't know. I'm not a tax attorney.
I'm not a tax attorney either. This isn't legal advice. But yeah, that's what I've heard, Aria, is that if you get a quote-unquote capital gain on the cryptocurrency, then that's taxable, which would mean that somehow you'd have to be able to track, and I believe this is an impossibility, but you'd have to be able to track the amount at which you, if you bought the crypto, because a lot of us just earned it.
Sure.
It was donated to us or whatever. If you bought the crypto at a certain price and then you sold the crypto at a different price and the price at which you sold is higher than the price at which you bought, technically that's a capital gain and then you have to pay taxes on whatever that gain is.
That would be impossible for someone to calculate if they're buying $20 of cryptocurrency each week.
Every week. Or, you know, on occasion, not even knowing how much you're buying at any given time. You know, maybe it's $100 this week or $50 another week or whatever, and you don't keep track of it. And how could you possibly keep track of it? And also, how do you know when you look at your Bitcoin wallet, you know, if you've been buying Bitcoin over, this is 2016 to 2020 is what they want to get out of Kraken here. So if you're buying Bitcoin over two or four of those years or whatever, and you've accumulated, you know, a whole Bitcoin in that amount of time, and then they come and they say, you sold some of it. Well, how do you know if you sold the Bitcoin that you bought back in 2016?
True.
Versus, because again, if you only sold a tenth of the Bitcoin, was it the 10th that you bought in the first year that you were buying Bitcoin over the first 6 months? Or was it the 10th from the last 6 months? Or I mean, the average user would have no way of knowing that. And I'm an above average user, and I would have no way of knowing that or tracking that information.
If you transferred it all into a single wallet.
Yeah, it's an impossible task to do whatever it is that they're expecting people to do here.
Well, and that's sort of because Bitcoin is designed to not pay for bombs.
Whether that was Satoshi Nakamoto's intention is an interesting discussion. I think it was. I think that Satoshi Nakamoto absolutely did create cryptocurrency to help people get out of this insane government money system that is honestly evil. It is haram, if you want to use the term from our Islamic brothers. It is anti-freedom. It's anti-peace. It is the devil's money, basically. It is haram. It's a religious. It is against my religion to use government monies. And now I'm forced by government threat to use their money. And it sickens me. And it is against my, it violates my religious beliefs to do that. And I suspect you feel similarly.
Yes. That is one of the worst parts is not being able to use this thing that, you know, I've loved.
Yeah.
For the last many, many years.
It's been my life for, you know, my life's outreach in the last 5 years.
For this and many other reasons. Yeah. I don't want to fund the drug war. I don't want my money to steadily lose value because the United States government needs to buy a new bomb to drop on people in Afghanistan. Or to bomb a Doctors Without Borders hospital. Or do any of the other horrific things they're doing with USD.
Yep, I don't consent. IRS Commissioner Chuck Reddig said, "There is no excuse for taxpayers continuing to fail to report the income earned and taxes due from virtual currency transactions. This John Doe summons is part of our effort to uncover those who are trying to skirt reporting and avoid paying their fair share."
Now, a John Doe summons just means, I mean, they're not targeting any specific individual that they know by name.
Yeah, they don't know who they're targeting. They want to find out.
They have a list of characteristics or qualities that they're looking for.
Right.
And What's the word from Kraken on this?
Good question. I'll see if I can find out if they've commented.
I hope they have. But who knows? I mean, ultimately, they'll cave. They'll give the government whatever they want. Mm. What are your thoughts? 603-283-6160. There's more coming up. We're going to see what Kraken actually has to say about the IRS here. Hopefully, I mean, if they've said anything. More coming up. It's Free Talk Live. It is Free Talk Live, the only libertarian national radio show that allows you to take control of the airwaves and talk about whatever you want. And if you value that, you may consider joining the AMP program like Derek did. Derek is a platinum level amplifier, which means that Derek is giving at least $25 per month to the AMP program. Of course, we don't ask that. All it takes to join the program is $5 per month. That gets you in. AMP stands for Advertise, Market, and Promote. Money that you use to join the AMP program is used strictly to advertise, market, and promote Free Talk Live. So if you value this show and the spreading the ideas of liberty to more radio stations, letting more people express themselves and enjoy their First Amendment rights to do that, you may consider joining the AMP program. Check it out, amp.freetalklive.com. That's amp.freetalklive.com. Let's go to the phones. So we got Mike Eklund, who is calling from California. Mike, you're on Free Talk Live.
Thanks, Mike. So I'm a bi-curious, and I was wondering, so with Bitcoin, do you have to have an alternative lifestyle to use Bitcoin?
What does that even mean?
So, like the BI in the BIC coin.
The what?
The BI, the buy, the BI in the Bitcoin.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear what he said, so I put him on hold for a second. You're still with us, Mike.
Huh?
I don't think he's actually still with us. So, but
funny.
Yeah. Bitcoin is definitely, it's Bitcoin,
no, it's
is an alternative thing.
Coin. It's not a buy coin only for bisexuals or alternative sexual lifestyles. No, that's, we don't even know what Satoshi Nakamoto's sexual preferences were. We don't even know whether Satoshi is a he or a she.
But, you know, he mentions alternative lifestyles, and you kind of do have to have an alternative lifestyle in order to use cryptocurrency, because
what do you mean?
It is outside of the mainstream lifestyle to spend cryptocurrency, to acquire it,
okay,
to use it to buy things. That is an alternative lifestyle. It's not an alternative lifestyle in the way that people generally mean it. But you are operating a lifestyle outside of what most people would consider to be normal. If you're getting paid in cryptocurrency and using it to pay all your bills, then you're living an alternative lifestyle. Whether you're straight or cis,
but
or whatever.
Most people aren't doing that. I mean,
no.
Those people that are involved in cryptocurrency, I suspect the majority of them have just bought some and are holding on to it because they heard number might go up. And so,
so they're flirting with an alternative lifestyle.
They're teasing.
They're crypto curious, one might say.
Yeah, well, it's definitely true that you are in a minority if you're a cryptocurrency,
sure,
user at any level, whether you're just a hodler, as they call it, or if you are a truly, you know, in-depth cryptocurrency coder, you know, you're writing changes to the Bitcoin blockchain back-end code or whatever. You know.
Man, having experimented with some degree of coding, I can't imagine how much work you have to do to even begin to comprehend the Bitcoin code?
Yeah, yes. You got to know your math.
Yes, it's insane, dude.
Yeah, that's not the field for me, but I'm grateful for those crypto geeks that know what they're doing in,
yes,
that area, because, man, you guys are awesome. The technology that they've come up with and they continue to come up with, not just on Bitcoin, but on the alternatives to Bitcoin that are out there that are just incredible and technologically, you know, advanced even beyond what Bitcoin originally was. So kudos to the innovators out there, and I hope that some of them are very, very successful. But if you're involved in cryptocurrency in any way, you are definitely in a minority. I wouldn't call you, alternative per se, because there's a lot of mainstreamers that are getting into this. I mean, you got Elon Musk, you got Paris Hilton was at the most recent Bitcoin conference in Miami earlier this year. Busta Rhymes just got on Twitter like last week saying he's getting into to Bitcoin.
Well, that's how counterculture works, right? It starts out as this minority, but it grows, and then suddenly
it goes mainstream.
Yeah, and now it's not the counterculture, it's the culture.
Right. I would say that Bitcoin, you know, given the personalities, the mainstream personalities that have sort of glommed onto it in recent months, I mean, it seemed like early 2021, that shoot up to 60,000 was the real big one. Certainly a lot of people paid attention when it hit 19,000 back in late 2017, but, you know, now it seems to have really solidified. It's like the fact that it isn't going away, that people, it's harder and harder as it continues to rise for people to downplay it, for people to say, it's just going to, it's going to fade away. You know, this is just a fad.
Yeah, even the banks like J.P. Morgan and I think Goldman Sachs are being forced to say, okay, yeah, we were wrong about this innovative new financial technology that we should have been at the forefront of, but we're not because we're protected from competition by the government. And instead, this thing that, you know, they weren't protected from sprung up. And now it's powerful enough where they have to acknowledge its existence and its validity. And that's a beautiful thing.
Yep, it really is. So I would say crypto's gone mainstream at this point, even though it hasn't
going mainstream.
Yeah, it hasn't caught on to the point where everybody's got it yet. It's still a very, very small percentage of people, I suspect, that have it.
Of people has driven the value of Bitcoin. What's it at now? Do you know offhand?
Oh, I can find that out for you. But it's tremendous.
Whatever it is, that small percentage of people who are expressing a demand for Bitcoin by purchasing it have driven the value of Bitcoin up to something like $30,000.
Oh, the per unit price is currently over $39,000 today.
We're back up to almost 40K.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. You mentioned that last night. I'd just forgotten it.
Yep. And that means the total market cap, the global value of all the 18.76 million Bitcoins that are out there, is currently over $730 billion.
Awesome.
Which places Bitcoin in like the top five as far as if you look at like U.S.-based corporations like Walmarts and Teslas and Amazons and that sort of thing. It's like in the top five.
Yeah. And that's just from the demand of a small percentage of the population.
Yeah, so that's right.
Get your Bitcoin now before, 50% of people in the U.S. or in the world have a demand for it, because by then, who knows what the value of Bitcoin would be. I'm sure there's some sort of calculus one could do to get some sort of
estimate.
General estimate, but millions probably.
I mean, it's not unreasonable to say it's going to go over 100,000 at some point. I think a lot of people believe
certain.
That. 500,000, I think, is what John McAfee was predicting at some point before he came to an untimely supposed demise.
No, man, it's all a hoax so that he didn't have to eat a certain part of his body.
Well, he had already reneged on that prior to going to jail.
Sure. I still like saying it as a joke, though. It's all just an elaborate conspiracy so he didn't have to eat any parts of his body.
So, the IRS, they're demanding that Kraken hand over this information. And according to an article on Forbes about this, which came out about a week later, the request is looking for certain information of the users of Kraken who have done over $20,000 worth of trades in 4 years worth of time, including name, taxpayer ID number, date of birth, physical address, telephone number, and email address for cryptocurrency investors who have unreported crypto, whether in an account with Kraken or anywhere else, the IRS is looking for you. So according to...
Well, having done $5,000 or $20,000 worth of cryptocurrency transactions on Kraken over a four-year period doesn't mean that one profited.
That's correct.
Or made any sort of gain upon which one would be required to pay taxes.
But that's what they want to do. They want to find out who those people are so they can send them threatening letters.
Yes.
And find out if they lied on a tax form, specifically. Rather than granting the petition, so this was originally petitioned in March 30th of 2021, the court issued an order to show cause, requiring the IRS to explain why the petition, which requested a vast array of information, should not be denied for the failure to meet the narrowly tailored requirement of the statute authorizing these so-called John Doe summonses. The IRS responded by both reducing the scope of information requested and by explaining that when it comes to cryptocurrency, a lot of information is needed to determine whether or not a taxpayer is skirting the rules. The IRS explained to the court that more than just the taxpayer's name, address, date of birth, and taxpayer ID number are needed to determine whether there's a tax compliance issue. The extensive information is needed, they say, because the IRS is aware of account holders whose information was handed over in the Coinbase case, which we talked about before, that used aliases, false addresses, or post office boxes, fictitious entity names, or other means to disguise their true identities.
I thought Coinbase KYC'd people, though. It seems like that would be very difficult to do with Coinbase.
They do KYC people, but maybe it's not a perfect process. I don't know.
For those who want to know, KYC stands for Know Your Customer.
Thank you, yeah.
And that basically means Coinbase was like, hey, we need to see your ID. We need to see proof of your address. We need to see all this other stuff similar. I think they want your social security card as well. I don't recall.
Maybe the person had a fake ID. You know, taxpayers, they say, who created false identities are more likely to evade their taxes, says the IRS.
It says a lot that the IRS is pursuing this instead of doing anything useful. What really do they care when the government is just limitlessly printing money? What is the point of even having this tax system in place?
Compliance.
Absolutely. Maybe you think differently. 603-283-6160.
Brute force, intransigent defiance, adamantine will. These are the hallmarks of the AI tank. These gigantic machines have the firepower of an army, but they also have their own sense of honor and duty. When the world breakers arrive, battle will be joined, planets will shake, and war and peace will never be the same again. World Breakers. Stories from David Weber, Larry Correa, and more. Available August 3rd from BaneBooks.com.
Free Talk Live.
It is Free Talk Live. 603-283-6160. You can join the conversation. With you in the studio tonight, it's Aria.
And it's Ian.
And we're going to change gears and make fun of some people for a bit, because it's sad. But before we do that, I have to say, you know, the school year is about to start. The school semester is about to start. I don't know how it works, but now's a great time, if you haven't considered it, to look into alternatives, because the CDC, in addition to doing the other nonsense, they suggested that kids in schools, in public schools, must wear masks, whether they're vaccinated or not. So they're not finished torturing your children. If you thought you could get your children vaccinated so that they didn't have to be tortured by the government, you were wrong. Get them out of public schools.
Yeah, it's the best thing you can do. You know, hey, I don't like the idea of being mean to somebody necessarily, but at the same time, looks like these people who are the vaccine people are not being very, very nice. In fact, some of them are actually out there calling for forced vaccinations against the unvaxxed. There's all this talk at the at the government level of the government gangsters that are making speeches or whatever they're saying, and the media is also clamoring for this. They're saying it's a, quote, pandemic of the unvaccinated now. So the unvaccinated are the pandemic now.
But that's demonstrably not the case, no matter how many times they say it.
Well, they're going to keep saying it because, you know, the old rule of propaganda, I think it was Hermann Goebbels or Joseph Goebbels or whoever, whatever his name was, from the Nazis. You know, I think he was famous for saying that if you say a thing, you know, often enough, people will start to believe that it's true. So that's really all they have to do. You can throw out all your evidence, as we did in the first hour of the show, that shows that, you know, there's a bunch of people who have the vaccine and are getting sick still. They're still coming down with COVID. Now they're changing all the rules again to say that, you know, now you've got to wear masks and
various different places. I mean, the CDC has all but admitted that the vaccine is ineffective against the Delta variant. And for anyone who knows anything about biology, the entire reason that the Delta variant is so prominent in the first place is because we have all these vaccinated people running around that are immune to all of the other strains we've seen. So that leaves only the Delta variant to break through their vaccine. The vaccinated people are the reason the Delta variant is on the rise.
That's probably true. But nonetheless, you've got opinion pieces here. The Washington Post. Enough already. It's time for vaccine entry passes. Another opinion piece at the Washington Post. I'm tired of being nice to vaccine refusers. So there really is an actual
They've never
movement.
Been nice to anyone who was even remotely skeptical of the narrative regarding COVID-19. We've been called murderers repeatedly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. A manslaughterer. I think that was one of them.
This is not new.
Well, the point is that, you know, for those...
That was them being nice?
For those people... Well, I'm not going to collectivize them. Maybe there were some people that were trying to be kind about it. Like, oh, you need to get the vaccine. Here's why you need... Well, now they're getting angry because people aren't being persuaded by them.
But there's nothing to persuade them anymore.
Well, it's always persuasive when all of your friends do a thing, right? Like, then it's the bandwagon approach. And if you... You know, remember, we heard during 2020... People who were living in the city, who were libertarian or who were voluntarists or anarchists, were frustrated because they were surrounded by people like this. They were surrounded by these vaccine seekers, these obedient people who they'd been friends with because, you know, you live in the city, you're probably going to be friends with some liberals, right?
Like, sure.
Unless you don't want to have any friends. And now their friends have turned on them because they didn't want to get a vaccine, and now they were without any friends, and they're thinking about leaving the city, and they should think about it. They should move to New Hampshire and join, you know, the migration of freedom-loving people that have come here because, by the way, apparently in related news, the Free State or Free State NH over at Twitter has posted that a Medical Freedom Act has been signed into law, surprisingly, by Governor Chris Sununu here. So
That is surprising.
Yeah, not only did it pass the House and the Senate, it also got signed and went into effect immediately. The new law says that the state cannot mandate vaccinations, nor can state government set rules to participate in society based on individual New Hampshire citizens' private medical status. The new law puts state practices into alignment with the recently passed 2018 passed NH constitutional amendment. This was put on the ballot, by the way, for people to vote on, that said right to privacy, an individual's right to live free from governmental intrusion in private or personal information is natural, essential, and inherent. That was added to the New Hampshire Constitution.
I remember that. I had forgotten about that until right now. But yes, that was it. And it passed with very high numbers.
I recall it did. Yeah. So New Hampshire, something like
70%, if I recall correctly.
Yeah. And so a lot of people are, you know, praising Florida. You've heard a lot of praise for Florida. Oh, it's the freest state with, you know, COVID crackdown rules or whatever. Well, according to Free State NH, Florida, which purportedly banned vaccine passports, actually passed a bill that allows for forced vaccinations.
Oh, no.
So be careful what you're getting in these political packages, unless you're reading the whole thing.
Yeah, for those who aren't aware, what this basically means is that New Hampshire just outlawed vaccination passports.
And
they made it illegal for the government to force you to get the vaccine.
Now, there's still a way it could come into play, right? Like if the corporations do it. Well, then it's not the government. And so,
sure. You know, so
New Hampshire's government cannot force a vaccination passport. So that's all that they can do, I guess, in this particular case. They're not going to be able to tell a private company what they can't do, right? Or what they can do.
Well, they do it all the time.
But in this case, they're not going to, because they will likely lose that court case.
Yeah.
So a private company does have the right.
That's the way it works.
Yeah, they're going to have the right to make this discriminatory choice if that's what they decide to do. But hopefully this will, at the very least, protect us from a state mandated thing. So that's some good news.
Which at least, yeah, that's good news.
But things are getting nasty out there.
The
pro-vaccine people are getting desperate because they still see people getting sick, and they believe what they're being told by the government agencies, which is, well, if only more people would get the vaccine, then no one would get sick. I mean, Joe Biden said, if you get the vaccine, you won't get sick.
Yes, he did.
In his recent town hall, which is not true, but that's what he said.
And the
people
government,
believe it.
And the government is scrambling trying to figure this out. They're like, this doesn't make any sense. How are the vaccinated still catching COVID-19? This Delta variant seems to be immune to our vaccination. How did this happen? Well, it is a direct result of the vaccine and the fact that so many people have gotten it.
Yeah.
It had nowhere else to live. Well, I mean, it had no other course before it but to evolve. in order to bypass their vaccination defenses.
So the reason why people are so, vitriolic, are so nasty, are getting so upset, is because they're afraid. They believe that this thing is deadly.
I don't know why anyone believes that at this point.
Even though there's no evidence that it's really any more deadly than any of the flu. And by the way, the reason why the flu disappeared in 2020 is apparently because the PCR test can't determine the difference. Did you hear about this?
I did hear about it, but not in detail.
Me neither. But that's what I heard, and that's one of the reasons why they're throwing the PCR test out, apparently, at the end of this year.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't matter now because they've already come up with all this BS, quote-unquote, science based on the PCR test, because that's the test that they were running all throughout 2020 to scare everybody about how bad this supposed COVID thing was, when in point of fact, everybody that had the flu was likely triggering this PCR test for COVID. Mm. And then they were reporting all the flu cases as COVID. So how much of it was really COVID and how much of it was really the flu? And what does it matter anyway?
It was amazing how the flu just vanished last year.
That doesn't happen. The flu doesn't just vanish.
It doesn't.
Ever. Like, the flu keeps coming.
Every single year.
Right.
And, you know, they put out the argument that, oh, well, it's because people were wearing masks and social distancing. But no, evidently it's because their tests couldn't tell the difference between COVID and the flu.
Right. Total BS.
That's definitely something I want to look further into, because I had heard that but hadn't had the chance to look into it yet. But it's not surprising. The PCR tests were flawed from the very beginning, according to the guy who made them.
The guy that made them, who then showed up dead.
Did he?
Did you hear about that?
I did not.
Yep.
Not terribly.
Shortly thereafter. Shortly last year was after things started getting bad, apparently, or something like that.
Not terribly surprised to hear that. It's a terrible game they play, and it's played largely with fear. The more afraid you are, the more you'll submit to whatever they demand of you just to give you an illusion of security. What are you willing to give up? 603-283-6160. More coming up here. It's Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live, 603-283-6160, if you want to join the discussion. And since we're about to discuss it anyway, I want to remind people that tomorrow is going to be the Topless Wednesday episode of She Talk Live, where myself, regular co-host Angie, and regular co-host Nikki are going to be in the studio completely topless, but only at video.freetalklive.com.
That's right, which is our Odyssey video streaming page. We will still have streams on the other platforms. They just won't have topless ladies on them.
I'm curious what you're going to put up. I mean, obviously it's going to be something like, hey, if you want to see this,
there will be a notice to let people know. Because, I mean, not everybody listens to every show, so they may not know until it's actually that show, in which case there will be a notice on screen informing you of where you can go to actually see the uncensored feed. Because if we put it on those other platforms, we're going to get pulled down.
Yeah, we know what the result would be. Yeah. Because, I mean, they've done it to me before, and that's inconsequential, but this is very much against their policies. A part of me still wants to do it because their policies never specify that female toplessness is not okay. It's always just toplessness is not okay.
At least that's the case on Twitch. I don't know what all the other individual policies are.
I can't imagine any of them would be brazen enough to say, yes, we're discriminating what you can and can't do on the basis of your sex or gender.
I don't know. I'm not going to spend my time looking for them. We like Odyssey. We're going to give Odyssey the exclusive on this.
Yeah. So, that's video.freetalklive.com.
If you're not following us there, go ahead and do that right now. Video.freetalklive.com.
Vernon, you had a question regarding tomorrow night's episode. You're on Free Talk Live.
Yeah. Well, can we expect Bonnie on any of these by any chance in the future?
I doubt it. And that is based on what Bonnie has told me. Yeah, and so the reason for that is, of course, well, you know, as you know, the internet is a very permanent place, and there are a lot of creepy, creepy guys. She specifically named Dave from New York as an example of a particularly creepy individual who, you know, you never know what those people are going to do with those things. And, you know, I wish that people didn't care about these sorts of things. I wish toplessness was as unremarkable as somebody wearing a top and that it wasn't a big deal. But the reality
I agree entirely.
The reality is, for some people, it's still a big deal out there, and there's some very, very disturbed individuals out there. So I can't say that I disagree with her on this. Bonnie's a very beautiful young lady, and I think she's making the right choice.
So I got one other question about it. Is this more for attention and, you know, let's draw attention to Free Talk Live, or is this more of like a women's rights thing, or is it both, or can you talk a little bit about that? Like, what's the purpose, I guess?
Well, it's all of the above, honestly. I mean, I am a troll at heart, but you can troll and still have a purpose behind doing it, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what this is. Yes, the initial idea was to troll Twitch and DLive and all of these other mainstream video platforms, but it was also to point out that, you know, we did get suspended from Twitch back when I did a topless show called Aria Uncensored. Right. They didn't censor us last week when we did Topless Tuesdays.
The week before,
I wasn't topless.
Good point. Yeah, that's true.
But that was also because, you know, when you're sitting here with this camera angle, that I don't think my breasts were ever in the shot.
I don't know.
Not to any significant degree. But
the title might have been obscuring it a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So the point is that a trans woman should be able to do a stream topless, if she so chooses, without running into the risk of being censored when we exist in a world where cis men can do that without a problem, without any issue whatsoever.
Well, and not only should a trans woman be able to, but any woman, anyone, anywhere should be able to be topless on a video feed. And the reason for that is because toplessness shouldn't be provocative. It shouldn't be considered pornographic. It isn't. It's not. Right. It shouldn't be considered sexual. But unfortunately, there are some people who do consider it that. And that's sad, but that's just the reality of where we're at in society.
And that's why we spread it from Topless Tuesday to She Talk Live to make exactly that point, that, you know, there's nothing sexual about this, and we shouldn't treat it as though it is.
Yeah, should a woman wish to show her you know, self topless, whether it be in public or whether it be on a video feed, then she should be free to make that choice.
But look forward to seeing it. Thank you all.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for the call tonight, Vernon.
And by the way, in New Hampshire, as I understand it, it is actually legal for a female to be topless in public.
Yes. There are some restrictions on what you can and can't do, but they're generally things that a person wouldn't do in public anyway.
The restriction, as I understand it, is you cannot be lewd and lascivious, meaning that you could not go around and, you know, do things that might titillate, you know, in a fashion that could be considered sexual. But again, just walking down the street on a hot day, being topless is not a sexual act.
No, and, you know, I'm of the mind that if you want to make toplessness a sexual act by, like, going up to men at a bar topless and being lewd and lascivious, as you said, well, in that case, you are making your toplessness sexual.
Well, in that case, you'd be in a bar, and that would be private property, which I think brings in a different set of freedoms that you wouldn't have out in public.
But the point is very much to troll. I'm enjoying getting a laugh out of it. I got it. Mm-hmm. Plenty of laughs out of last Tuesday as well. So, you know, I love trolling, and I don't really care. That, you know, it's sometimes an issue when you don't care much about the consequences that something would have. We're like, yeah, I mean, we'll get kicked off Twitch. It's fine. Let's do it anyway. So, I mean, occasionally that's a problem. But you came up with the plan of, you know, splitting these streams onto two different methods, I suppose. Where if people want to see the topless episode of She Talk Live, they have to go to video.freetalklive.com.
Which is what we've been talking about a lot recently, given the decentralization that we've been doing here on Free Talk Live over the last several years, but more so in just the last 6 to 7 months. And Odyssey is a key component to that. The live streaming is centralized, from what I understand, but as soon as the stream's over, the archive goes up on Library, and it's completely uncensorable, and it is decentralized, and it's awesome. So check it out, video.freetalklive.com.
Speaking of centralization, decentralization, there's so many other methods out there for people to get away from this big tech censorship.
Yes.
Free Talk Live also has a chat server that people can find at matrix.freetalklive.com or chat.freetalklive.com, rather. There's so many URLs, it's hard to keep track of them at times. And even a Mastodon server, which is a Twitter clone that people can find at social.freetalklive.com. So awesome things going on, and I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to happen. It became a brilliant way of directing people to video.freetalklive.com to get them away from these tech platforms.
Yeah, you got to try it out. I mean, YouTube's addictive. You know, you've got your favorite channels, you've got your subscriptions, if you've been on it for a decade or whatever, right? There's some good content there. I mean, there's no denying that as tyrannical and as awful as YouTube has become, it's still an entertaining venue to go to find stuff that's interesting.
Well, if you have an ad block.
That helps a lot.
I wouldn't touch YouTube without an ad block on my PC.
Oh, yeah, that helps a lot. But the content's still there, and there's a lot of good content there. But there's stuff on Odyssey that you just can't get on YouTube. I mean, there is all kinds of weird stuff and interesting stuff that's been banned by YouTube that it's there on Odyssey.
I think the best example I can think of is the guy from, I think, Pakistan who was doing videos with Chinese people, Chinese Uyghur Muslims, who had been to these concentration camps, and YouTube
banned him.
Which caused him to also move to Odyssey.
Yep, and that's certainly the most important example that we've heard recently.
So check that out tomorrow night, video.freetalklive.com. There's more coming up. We're going to get into some sad and pathetic but funny stuff.
When a lunar observatory detects a radio broadcast originating from Proxima Centauri, the nations of Earth discover their first contact with an alien race may also be their last. With the Proximans facing an extinction-level disaster, Earth must choose between sending a ship on a multi-year journey or allowing nature to take its course. Saving Proxima, a hard science fiction thriller by Travis S. Taylor and Les Johnson. From BaneBooks.com.
It's Free Talk Live, 603-283-6160. That's the call in line if you want to weigh in. 603-283-6160. With you tonight, it's Aria and Ian. And we're going to finally get into this article that is both sad, pathetic, and amusing all at the same time. And it's such a weird mix of emotions when I hear things like this because, you know, it's just humorous how they are portraying this. But it's also very much sad and pathetic at the same time.
Well, they're portraying it in a way that is taking the COVID very seriously. To them, it's not humorous at all. This is a matter of life and death and time.
That's what makes it so funny.
Yeah, because it's not. I mean, it's not that deadly at all. But yet Time's headline here, even vaccinated people are nervous about going back to, quote, normal. Here's how to cope. But just to give you an example of the kind of person that we're talking about in this story, you and I were just discussing this Brooklyn dad character a moment ago because I just happened to be scrolling through Twitter and found a little video clip that shows a bunch of tweets from people where a bunch of presumably leftists are actually saying things about how January 6th, the so-called insurrection, was worse than 9/11.
Not on par with, worse. That's insane.
And the first person that they quote in this 30-second series of clipped Twitters or tweets is BrooklynDad_Defiant, who says, I am traumatized all over again while watching this video recap of January 6th. Don't try to tell me January 6th was not worse than 9/11. These rioters were Americans.
I mean, when you hear that description, you have to think, oh, man, this guy must have been one of the security officers or one of the police officers who responded or something like that. But no, he was just some dude who watched a video of it from 1,200 miles away.
Yeah, but I recognize the name because I'd seen him before, and the context in which I saw him before was even more pathetic. And I found that tweet.
Oh, awesome.
Because you brought up the question, well, is this guy even like, you know, a real account?
And yes, when I heard that, I couldn't believe that someone was comparing the January 6th thing where one person died to 9/11 where almost 3,000 did.
Yeah, no, this guy's real. He's got almost a million followers, 916,000 followers on his verified blue checkmark Twitter account. Proud Papa, perpetually pissed. That's his little, you know, tagline or whatever for his account. But here's what brought him to
perpetually afraid would be more accurate.
He's a coward. Here's what brought him to my attention. August 18th, 2020. So this was before the election, right? So this is during the competition between Trump and Biden. Here's his tweet. My wife just now, quote, Jill Biden is going to give America a mommy again. It's what we need, unquote. And he says, amen.
I don't need a mommy.
I sure as hell don't need one from the government. I mean, I don't need a mommy, period. But the last, if I needed one, the last place I would look would be the psychopath sickos running the federal government, whether it be Jill Biden or whatever the hell Trump's wife, Melania, or her, that woman, or who, any of these people. These people are sick.
I'm more stricken by the infantilism
yes.
here.
This is a full-grown man.
Yes.
Using, supposedly.
And his wife
yeah.
using the word mommy.
Yeah, and associating that with a politician's wife.
That's horrifying, yeah. dude.
That's the kind of person this guy is. Like, that's what these people get excited about when it comes to politicians. It's like, oh, boy, we get a mommy and a daddy again in the White House. They can tell us what to do.
I would be... Look, if Joe Biden was my grandfather or my father, I'd be like, dude, it's time to go to a nursing home. You've lost it.
24,000 likes on that particular statement. So he is not alone in that particular belief system.
Having a mommy.
The government
again.
Should be your mommy.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That's horrifying.
That's what America's been missing all this time.
I mean, but it's not an uncommon it's not an uncommon position. A lot of people do view the government as their parent.
Yeah, and it's sick.
But, I mean, it makes sense when you think about it from an animal standpoint. The government feeds them. Mm-hmm. It houses them. It provides for them.
It tells them what to do.
It tells them what
constantly.
To do. It does exactly what a parent is supposed to do, only it's, you know, evil and aggressive. Well, hopefully your parents
weren't. Yeah, a good
parent
won't beat you and cage you.
Yes.
For, you know, going against their will. But that brings us to the story here from Time Magazine. So again, that statement from him was a year ago. Now we go to other cowards that are like him, like Claudia Campos, age 34. 34.
Campos?
C-A-M-P-O-S. Campos.
Okay. It would have made a lot of sense if her last name was Campos.
She wanted there to be no doubt about why she continues to wear a face mask at the Florida car rental company where she works. She decided to screen print a mask that telegraphs her thoughts.
See, this is how masks became a political statement.
Mm-hmm.
It's not enough that she wears a mask. She wants you to know why the mask is important to her. She wants you to know her political beliefs and why the mask is important to those political beliefs.
Yes, because it is a political statement. It is a religious totem. It is a thing, this icon that is worshipped, that there's a ritual.
It's a literal scrap of cloth,
yeah,
and nothing more. But they do treat it as though it's this holy artifact.
Oh, of course it's a scrap of cloth, but I mean, in Christian churches, a little cracker represents the skin or the body of Christ.
Yes, so, and, and I would say that's equally silly.
Yeah. So she says, here's why.
It's also cannibalism.
She screen printed a mask that telegraphs her thoughts to all of her customers at this car rental company. I'm vaccinated, it reads, but I'm not ready to trust you. Campos' slogan distills the complicated emotions many people are feeling. I don't think it's complicated.
I think it's just, pretty simple.
Yeah, it's just these people are racked with fear, and they just are deathly afraid of other people out there who would dare to live their lives in not the state of fear that these people live in. That's all it is. Very simple.
I can't imagine just being that afraid, dude.
I can't either. But this is her. So
I mean, if you're that afraid to live, then how can your life possibly be worth living?
Emotions that many... This is Time Magazine, by the way. Emotions many people are feeling as the summer of vaccination commences. That's what this is called? The U.S. Centers for Disease Control...
I prefer to call it the summer that the vaccinations created the Delta variant.
As the CDC has said, the roughly 43% of the people in the U.S. who are fully vaccinated can mostly ditch masks, travel safely, and gather indoors with others. Now, this is an old article.
Yeah, it just dated itself because the CDC has again changed its mind.
Right, this goes back to mid-June. I've been holding on to this one. In a March 2021 American Psychological Association poll, about half of respondents said they were, quote, uneasy about resuming in-person social interactions, regardless of vaccination status.
How can they not be eager to resume in-person social interactions?
Because they might die, Aria!
But they're social creatures. They're humans.
We literally had a woman in New South Wales in Australia telling people on television, their national television, that they can't even talk to their neighbor even if they have a mask on. If you happen to run into your neighbor in the grocery store, do not talk to them. There was another, I don't even remember where it was, but another set of recommendations from some government, I think it might have been the United States, said don't make extended eye contact with people at restaurants. It might have been the UK. I don't remember where it was, but it was like...
I hadn't heard that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, don't even make extended eye contact. Not because you can transmit COVID through your eye contact, but because you might want to talk to that person, right? Like if you're, you know, making eyes at somebody, you might want to go over and speak to that person. No, you can't do that.
That's insane.
About half of vaccinated respondents, this is in the May 25th Axios Ipsos poll, said they still wear a mask at all times outside of the house. Already vaccinated, half of those people in May said they were still wearing a mask at all times, regardless of the CDC's announcement at the time that doing so is no longer necessary.
Well, that kind of makes sense. I imagine the people who were first out the door to go get the vaccine were the people who were the most pro-mask and people who were most afraid. So it makes sense that they would continue wearing the mask just because they're that afraid.
And more about those people coming up here in moments.
603-283-6160. There's still time to join us if you want. 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. It is Free Talk Live. And you know, I was thinking during the break, this is what television has done to people. And it's not really television. I'm not against television in and of itself. I'm not against sitting around, you know, relaxing and watching something to pass the time or whatever. But the constant fear-mongering that came from the television set over the last 18 months or however long it was.
And still coming.
I mean, we're lucky because neither of us watch broadcast television, so we were not really exposed to it. But the few times that I did see any sort of commercial or advertisement or anything like that, COVID was front and center.
Oh, yeah. Even in, like, you know, pizza company ads, the delivery guy had a mask on. I mean, every single corporate advertisement was mask, 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 obedience.
And they would always say something like, we'll get through this together, yeah, you know, yeah. Some stupid positive uplifting message.
Yeah,
but
I think McDonald's had that on their storefront.
But that doesn't change the fact that, you know, they just conspired together accidentally or intentionally to bombard the public with fear mongering for the last 18 months.
Sure.
So I'm not at all surprised that people who were exposed to that, you know, just completely caved in and are basically traumatized, even if they're not using that word, but these people were traumatized. You can't make someone afraid for 18 months of their life. Not this level of afraid, right? Where they're vaccinated against this disease, but they're still wearing masks because they're that afraid of it. That's a new level of fear.
Yeah, it's totally irrational. But then again, you know, we're able to look at this thing and not be afraid.
And that's why they hate us.
Yeah. And
it's none of the other excuses.
Oh, yeah. They think, and as you'll hear from a psychiatrist or psychologist coming up here in the story, that makes us weird. And we'll get to that.
That's not what makes us weird.
Yeah. But, you know, when they first started pitching this thing back a year plus ago, back in March or whenever it was, I immediately didn't believe it. It's like, oh, well, the government's saying a thing? It's got to be false. I mean,
I didn't know what to believe at the time. I was like, well, what the government is saying is probably not true. I mean, the devil tells the truth if it benefits him. So I was like, okay, maybe this is true, maybe it isn't. But there was no reason to, there was nothing they said that justified the actions they wanted to take with the lockdowns and the mask mandates and all of that.
Oh, yeah.
And that was where my issue came in. And then as time went on, it became very, very inescapably clear that they're making the vast majority of this up as they go.
Yeah, and of course, the more severe the response, the more severe people think that this thing is. And so I agree with you. These are traumatized people, and they're sad. Let's go on with another example from Time Magazine. Again, this is all about people and how afraid they are to just go back to some semblance of normality. And then they're...
And that's what makes this so sad and pathetic, in my opinion. I mean, this isn't really their fault. The government, the media, the advertisers, they tormented these people. They traumatized them.
I mean, I'm not going to take away all their responsibility for being able to choose who they believe. So I'm going to say that it is their fault for being so easily led and being, you know, looking to these people, believing these people, not being skeptical about what the media, which has historically been, you know, part and parcel of the government's propaganda arm for a long time. Anyway, let's continue. Here's another example. Lauren, a 38-year-old from New York City. The first woman was 35 who was too afraid to take off a mask. This woman's 38, from New York City, of course, who asked to be identified by first name to preserve her privacy, says she and her wife are living essentially as they did in 2020, which means under all the restrictions, even though they're both fully vaccinated. They've dined inside once, an experience simultaneously refreshing and stressful, Lauren says. But otherwise,
I don't think I've ever in my life went out to eat at a restaurant and found it to be a stressful experience.
But otherwise have stayed mostly outside and mostly masked. That's in large part because, get this, the couple has a 2-year-old daughter who isn't eligible for vaccination and they want to keep her safe.
What is the percentage of 2-year-olds that have been...
Zero?
Even hospitalized.
0.000
I'm not going to say it hasn't happened. I'm sure COVID-19 has killed a 2-year-old. But the odds, you can't live your life based on something that has a 0.00001% chance of happening.
And Lauren admits there's also, quote, some lingering anxiety from having followed all of these protocols for so long. It's hard to believe that certain things are actually safe, even though we know they should be. Rob Dansman.
So like a good little lab rat, they want the maze put back in front of them.
Rob Dansman, an Indiana-based licensed clinical medical mental health counselor, says that's a normal response to a year marked by confusion. He says humans are terrible.
No, it's a normal response for my dog to want to go back into a crate because at first she hated it, but now she loves it and she wants to cuddle in. That's a normal response for a dog. A normal human would go, thank God I'm free again. I never want to be back in that crate. And these people are putting themselves back in it willingly because they're terrified to step outside of it.
The so-called mental health counselor says, it's normal. Humans are terrible when it comes to not knowing the rules of the game. We had mixed messages, inconsistent science, inconsistent testimony, inconsistent mandates from different states. From my vantage point, if people were not experiencing some fear and trepidation, that'd be weird. And then the article goes on to promote the vaccines.
Oh, so we're weird?
Yes.
For not feeling fear and trepidation?
Yes. Very strange to actually, you know, live life like normal. COVID-19, they say the vaccination's outstandingly and consistently good. This is more propaganda from Time. And they talk about how people in, that have got the vaccine are 91% less likely to be infected than unvaccinated people, according to the CDC. But of course, as we've seen recently, it doesn't seem like anything's consistent.
I wonder how that statement holds up today, because I imagine with the rise of the Delta variant, that simply isn't the case any longer.
Yeah. So he says these findings support a return to normal life after vaccination. But with thousands of people in the U.S. continuing to test positive for the virus every day, it's understandable that even vaccinated people remain skittish around others, particularly if they live with unvaccinated or immune compromised people who are still at risk. Of course, as we've seen, all the vaccinated people are still at risk.
Yep.
So it doesn't really seem to do really anything at all. But and then they do mention the highly transmissible variants that are emerging are a reason for concern. So what to do? They say how to readjust. It's natural that people respond differently to reopening. Some individuals are at higher risk for severe COVID-19 than others. And personality, environment, and experience all dictate how someone will rebound from the pandemic. But while it's one thing to decide to take reopening slowly, it's another to feel so anxious about re-entering the world post-vaccination that it affects your mental health. Conflicting feelings after vaccination are totally normal, says Dansman. I can acknowledge I believe the science, and I also feel afraid, he says. Both of those can coexist. People should slow down and observe their thoughts, their feelings, and the choices in front of them. Most of us smush all those things together. Ask yourself
I would generally
questions.
Agree with that statement, but if they did that, they would realize there was no reason to feel afraid in the first place, and that's not a reality they're willing to confront after they did this to themselves for the last 18 months.
Ask yourself questions. Does a plan simply feel unfamiliar, or do you actually think it's unsafe? Are there adjustments that would make an outing feel more comfortable? Dansman adds that it may feel less overwhelming to think about one decision at a time, like whether to go out to dinner or remove your mask in a certain setting, rather than trying to make big sweeping statements about whether you're ready to go back to normal.
Who are these people that are so ridden with anxiety that they have to break down their evening into a set of smaller decisions about whether or not they're going to go out to eat?
Should I remove my mask or not? I really need to think about this for a while.
They call us weird, but for a normal, healthy person, whether or not to go out to eat is a split-second decision about whether or not you feel like going out to eat.
Not if you're a coward like Compost, who says she'd feel safer if around 70% of people in Florida were vaccinated. At the time of the writing, it was about 42% had had both shots.
What's the difference between 4 out of 10 and 7 out of 10?
It's all about her feelings and how she feels.
You're not any... Well, God, that's so bizarre, man.
Yeah. A little bit of exposure
therapy.
But they
trust the science. It's not about belief at all. The science has settled.
Well, they say they trust the science, but they still are afraid. A little bit of exposure therapy may help, too. For people who devoutly wore masks throughout the pandemic, shedding them may feel uncomfortable, even in a situation like walking in a park, where the science strongly supports doing so. To practice, Sultan recommends starting small. You could try taking your mask off for a few minutes, he suggests, or when you're alone and away from crowds.
See, this is why I couldn't be a therapist, man. I'd be like,
being a pussy. Yeah.
Suck it up, man.
Yeah.
You've turned this fabric of cloth on your face into a pacifier. Give me the pacifier and go live your life. You're an adult.
These people are not acting like adults, though. I mean, they are. You use the term perfectly, infantilized. This is just, it's so childified. It's so pathetic.
Yeah, and these people are literally talking about how the mask is like a pacifier that makes them feel better, whether it's needed or not. They're going to keep wearing it because it makes them sleep easier at night. Absolutely sickening. But hey, that's it for tonight's show. But definitely check out video.freetalklive.com for tomorrow's show. It's going to be an interesting one. We'll see you then. It's Free Talk Live.